Morning, everyone.
Morning.
What a great day to be a Christian. This morning, I just want to welcome everyone who's here. It's good to see you all your guests. I have a question for you. What's your favorite part about being in a garden? What's your favorite part about being in a garden? For me, it's just thinking about how everything grows and everything that goes into that. It's pretty amazing if you think about it. Men, you're probably thinking about, well, I care about the produce because I want to eat it. but children, maybe they don't have so fond memories of a garden because, at least for me, when I was a child, Mom said, go out to the garden and pick the weeds. and the garden produced vegetables. I didn't like vegetables. There wasn't much about a garden back then that I liked. And so, especially because I'd go out in the garden and I wouldn't know what was a flower and what was a weed half the time. And I'd end up picking up a flower when Mom, and she'd come out and she'd get a little angry with me. I can't tell the difference. But there's something about weeds that we're going to talk about this morning. Weeds have been on my mind a lot lately. If most of you know that I work with Wade, a lot of you may not know Wade, but he's my employer. But I've been pulling out a whole bunch of weeds in his pasture. In fact, for the last couple days, I've spent 6 hours pulling out weeds. It's hard work. And then not only that, I went to my dad's house for 4 hours and I was weed eating. And then at my house, my wife said, well, maybe you could weed eat the backyard. Okay, all right. So I've been just focused on weeds. And so what did I do? I wrote a sermon about it. And so, of course, weeds are going to represent this morning sin. Okay? And if you think about it, sin has a lot of characteristics of weeds. Weeds, they're dirty. They grow rapidly, they spread, they start out small. They start out small majority of the time. And they're kind of out in the distance and you don't really want to deal with them. Okay, they're over here. Yeah, they're going to be a problem, but they're not a problem now. But as soon as you know it, they're starting to spread throughout and they're starting to grow big and now they've made their presence. Now they're starting to come out and show something disgusting and something that needs to be taken care of. And isn't that what sin does? It starts off small, and then it starts to grow, it starts to fester, and it starts to become something that is unpleasant and that needs to be taken care of. And I believe that we can't understand the greatness of the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus without understanding how ugly a sin is and sin's consequences. The death, burial, and resurrection. Jesus came to earth as God, but as a man. He lived like you and I, and he was tempted in every single way, just as you and I are, in every single way. I hope you believe that. He didn't have this magical ability to not be tempted. He was tempted like we are, but he did not sin. And because of that, he gave us an example. And because of that, he can be used as this perfect sacrifice to save us from our sin. So God, it was in his eternal plan to send his son to die and to be resurrected on that third day, just as all the prophecies had talked about, so that we could be forgiven, so that we can have an inheritance with God one day, so that we are no longer controlled by sin, but now controlled by a Lord, by Jesus. Okay, so that is the beauty of the death, burial, and resurrection, because it saved us from our sin. That is why Jesus came, because he had a design for us, and we messed up that design by our human nature. But Jesus doesn't stop there. He knows that sin is going to be a problem. It is a problem in this world, and it needs to be dealt with. And he dealt with it once and for all. He conquered death. And because he conquered death, as Christians, we will too. We will inherit the kingdom that he has promised. But sin is still a problem. Sin is still a problem. It's been taken care of, but it will keep creeping up. It will keep on trying to pull us back. God's design, of course, is for us to not sin and to draw closer to Him. And yet you have a world out there that is trying to pull you away. So Jesus, He conquered sin once and for all, but He also gives us tools to take those weeds out as they continue to creep up in our life. And that's what we're going to talk about. How I've structured this is I'm going to talk about three problems, and then I'm going to talk about their solutions, okay? The first problem is that weeds take over rapidly. Weeds take over rapidly. Like I was saying, you've got some weeds kind of maybe in the corner of your lot and maybe some poking up a little bit in your driveway, all right? They're everywhere, but they're small, okay? Especially as spring comes along, then they start sprouting up and spreading everywhere and they get out of control. And sin is just like that. Sin doesn't always happen like that. Sometimes sin is pretty blatant and it's just there. But majority of the time, it starts off small, it starts to grow, starts to fester. So we want to take care of that problem before it gets out of control. And the solution is that sins must be faced, that weeds must be faced. They must be admitted and examined. And that's exactly what we can do. If you look at any 12-step program, what is the number one thing that they'll have you do? The first step. Yes. The first step is admitting that you have a problem, okay? Admitting it. And it's hard to admit that you have a problem unless you're examining yourself. Is that right? In 2 Corinthians 13, verse 5, it says, "Test yourselves to see if you are in the faith. Examine yourselves, or do you not recognize this about yourselves, that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you fail the test?" So what are we testing here? We're testing to see if we are in the faith. And how do you do that? You do that by looking at actions, okay? Faith is more than just a belief in God. Faith is more than a belief in Jesus. It is shown by our actions. You read that in Romans, you read that in James, because it shows the fruit that we're producing. If we call Jesus Lord and He says, "Follow after me," and we don't follow Him, that our faith doesn't mean much. That's my point, is we can test our faith, we can examine our life, and we can look inside of it and say, you know what? I am a part of the faith because I'm doing what Jesus has asked me to do. And the same with sin. We can examine ourselves, look at the sin in our life and see, you know, this is not producing something positive in my life and it needs to be taken care of. But that only happens through examination. And a lot of the times, we'll be here on Sunday morning and we'll say, examine yourselves right before you take the Lord's Supper, right? A good and positive thing. But examining your life takes more than 5 minutes. It takes time, and it is important time to spend to look at your life, reflect, and see what's in it that could use some work. I'm telling you, those six plus four plus two, I've spent a lot of time with weeds the last couple weeks. You start thinking about that, and if you relate that to your sin, I have found some things in my life that I need to work on, okay? And we'll get to that in a bit. But that's the first problem, is that weeds or sin takes over rapidly, and they need to be taken care of. The second problem is that weeds overrun the garden. Weeds overrun the garden. They have this way of covering over life, killing the life beneath it, hiding it, covering it, whichever word you want to use. But imagine in a garden, you've been spending all of this time growing these beautiful flowers and these vegetables, and you go out there a couple weeks later and they're completely covered in weeds. And maybe a couple of those plants have died because the weeds have taken over. It doesn't happen that quickly, but just imagine that. Sin sin does the same thing, okay? It starts to grow to a point where it is kind of taken over the beauty beneath, the flower that God has designed you to be. He has a purpose for your life. His purpose for your life is to serve Him and to serve His people and to become more like Him in every single way. And yet when we sin and when that sin festers, what do we think about ourselves? We look at ourselves as unworthy. We're just sinners. I'm never going to be better. There's nothing I can do. How could Jesus possibly love me? And yet He says, there is nothing that can separate you from My love. But that's the thing, is sin covers that. It allows us to look at ourselves differently. That's a problem, because in life, we need to see ourselves as God sees us, because a lot of people tell us differently. This person over here, I'm not pointing to anyone over here. In life, this person over here is going to say some mean things to me. They're going to put me down. They're going to put me in a place where I'm lower than I am. This person over here, or maybe myself, I'm telling myself, you are unworthy, you are pointless, you have no purpose. Have you ever said that to yourself? Has anyone ever said that to you? That's the product of sin taking over, and that's a problem, okay? The solution is found, I believe, in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 2. Hebrews chapter 12, 1 through 2 says, therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, he's talking about the men and women of faith from Hebrews 11, since we have so many people who have lived a life of faith and they're surrounding us, let us lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus. That's key right there. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of God. What did Jesus do? He was able to look past the current struggle into the future to see that position at the right hand of God, being back in glory with God. And because of that, because he fixed his eyes on something further, he was able to endure the cross. He was able to suffer that pain because of looking in the future. And we ought to do the same thing. We ought to fix our eyes on Jesus. We have these current struggles now, but these are not always going to be struggles, because one day as Christians, we have a place. We have an inheritance with God. That's good news. That is really good news. And so we must fix our eyes on Jesus and not allow the current struggles to take over our life, to not let them get in the way and tell us that we're something less, because we are loved by God. He does have a place and a purpose for us, if only we could see it. Let us not let the sin take over so bad that we can't see how God actually sees us. So the first problem, weeds take over rapidly. They overrun the garden. And the third problem is that they're still there. They need to be pulled. The solution, I believe, is in Genesis 4:7. Genesis 4:7 says, if you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Sin is crouching at the door. This set of verses is right there with Cain and Abel. And what did Cain decide to do? He decided to kill Abel. Okay, so he let that temptation overcome him. Sin was crouching at the door. Imagine that for instance. You've got a door and there's something behind it. Imagine the worst thing possible. Just let your imaginations go wild. And it's scratching at the door. The room is dark. And you don't know what's there, but it's trying to get you. Did you see that? It says that is sin. It is crouching at the door, and its desire is for you. It wants you. It wants to take you away from the relationship that you have with God. It wants to separate you from that. But look in Genesis 4:7, it says, but you must master it. You must master it. What does that mean? What does it mean to master over sin? Got a couple examples here. But it's going to take a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. A lot of blood, sweat, and tears. Take Jesus for example. In Hebrews 12:3-7, it reads like this. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. You have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood, and you're striving against sin. And you have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproached by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons, for what son is there whom his father does not discipline? Did you catch that in verse 4? It says, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin. Think of Jesus for a moment. Did he shed blood in his resistance against sin? I don't know what it means to not sin, because Romans says that all have fallen short. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. All of us here today have sinned. We do not know what it's like to not sin. Jesus can say that. He can say, I know what it's like to not sin. But he knows also what it's like to overcome temptation. And that is a great feeling, isn't it? I hope you have experienced that. I hope you have experienced being so tempted, because we all are. Okay, it's not a sin to be tempted. Not one bit. To be tempted with sin is not a sin. We are tempted, and it's right in our face, and we have a choice. Am I going to sin or am I not going to sin? And that struggle is hard. It will take blood, sweat, and tears to overcome that. I hope you have experienced overcoming temptation. It is a wonderful thing. As I've grown older, it happens a whole lot more than when I was a new Christian. It's something that I will continue to grow at, to be able to look sin in the eyes and say, no, I'm sorry, not going to go there. But Jesus, if you remember in the Garden of Gethsemane, okay, do you remember that? He is praying so hard that there is blood coming out as sweat. What kind of a struggle is that, to be able to have blood come out? Or think about Paul in 1 Corinthians 9:26 or 27, where it says, therefore I run in such a way as not without aim. There's that aim again. Jesus said to fix, or in Hebrews it said to fix your eyes on Jesus. Here's Paul saying he's doing the same thing. I'm looking forward. I run in such a way, not without aim, meaning I have aim. I box in such a way as not beating the air, but I discipline my body and make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified. Okay? Paul, an apostle of God, had it in him and thought that it was possible to be disqualified. Okay? He thought it that it's a possibility to be disqualified. From what? Disqualified from that inheritance, okay? And we too, there's a possibility of that. However, look at what Paul does. He, again, blood, sweat, and tears. Whatever it takes to overcome that temptation. Now, I want to take this opportunity to say that there is nothing that we can do as people. There is not a single work that we do, and there's not a single work that we don't do that will save us, okay? We're warned about that in Scripture, that if you're trying to earn your salvation by doing the right thing and overcoming sin, and then it's just going to be a big old circle, And it's actually a condemnable sin to think that you are saved other than being saved by Jesus alone. It is by grace that you are saved. It is his gift to you that you are saved. And we are justified by our faith. By our faith, not our face. We are justified by our faith. Our faith in God, which produces those good things, which produces those works. We're not saved by all the things we do and don't do. We are justified because Jesus has justified us, okay? However, he still says, follow after me. He still says, take care of your sin. And so as followers of Jesus, we do that. We do that. But if... Let me backtrack. Sin is a problem, okay? And it will continue to creep up in the form of temptation. And we have a decision to make. Are we going to give in to it or not? Jesus has provided the tools for us. He's given us a purpose. He's given us focus. And he's told us how to overcome it. And that's what we need to do as Christians. But the death, burial, and resurrection, of course, is the solution to that sin problem. He conquered death once and for all. The death, burial, and resurrection is the solution for the unsaved and for the saved. What do I mean by that? If you're saved, you still need the grace of God. You still need the grace of God. It is because of his grace that you are saved. And you need his help in overcoming that sin. Like I was saying earlier, that time spent in the garden, in the pasture, I realized there's some things in my life that need change. I'm being honest with you. I've noticed some things that are creeping up, and I'm allowing them to they're not at a point where they're mastering over me, okay? But they're at a point where they need to be taken care of. And maybe you have the same thing. Maybe you haven't thought about it or examined that. Take some time this week. I would encourage you to spend some time in the garden. And I'm being 100% serious. If you don't have a garden, there's parks. You have friends with gardens. Maybe you have a pasture. Spend some time there with the intent purpose of looking at weeds as sin, okay? And start pulling weeds. I'm being serious. Because I was able to put a whole sermon together just by pulling weeds, and it has blessed my life in a great way, being able to examine it and see that there are some things that need work on. And I hope this sermon has not come across as a negative thing, okay? As a negative sermon. My intention was not to be judgmental. It is not to induce guilt. It is to say that, you know what, we all struggle with problems in our life, okay? And Jesus is the answer to that problem. Jesus and following after him is the answer. And he gives us the tools to help us in life. Life is not always easy. In fact, it is full of struggle, okay? But if we only follow after him, life will be abundant as promised in the Gospel of John. You can have abundant life. It's not talking about that you're not going to be persecuted. In fact, we're promised to be persecuted as Christians because there's a world out there that doesn't like us. They don't like Jesus. They don't like what he's about. They could care less about his salvation. And you know what? That's going to cause some struggle and persecution in your life. So an abundant life is not physical, okay? The abundant life is the blessing of inheritance with God. If you are unsaved this morning, meaning you have not made the decision to follow after Jesus, I would hope you would consider that. If you are a Christian and you need help, if you need prayers like I do, please let those things be made known. You don't have to make it known publicly in front of everyone. There's a whole lot of men and women here that are ready to assist if you just let it be known. You can come forward as we stand and sing, or you could let us know. Be made known later. I just hope that if you have any needs whatsoever, you make them known somehow. Let's stand and sing together.